It's that time of the week again where we get together and discuss the week's biggest tech stories. A very big hello to you and welcome. My name's Ion, and as always I'm joined by, what's your name again? Oh, the laugh. That's Kane. That's Kane. Oh man, listen, hello Kane. How are you? Are you well?
Good to be back. Nice to be back without having power cut out from under us.
Yeah, much better. Mm. Much better. Yeah.
Breath of fresh air.
Yeah. I think that our regular listeners are probably wondering, will they be discussing the submarine? Yes, it's like our top story today.
Yeah.
We've been following it this week. I've been spamming you all week on WhatsApp with the links and stuff, you know, following the story. Because, okay, let's just start at the beginning. They went on Sunday, last Sunday, they went on this mission, five people.
Yes.
This Ocean Gate mission to go under the sea in the submersible and visit the Titanic wreck, which is at the very bottom of the ocean, the deepest of the deepest of the deepest, where... basically where the world ends.
3,800 meters deep.
Really, hey?
That's insane.
Like some, like whales, they don't even go that low.
No.
Yeah, so like, you have like lots of species there that probably haven't even been discovered.
Well, when you go under the water at about 200 meters depth, there's still light, but you can't really call it light anymore. So everything after that's basically a descent into pitch.
The darkest of darkness. The darkest. Like, yeah. Darker than load shedding.
Yeah. And the crazy thing about this particular submarine is it's completely sealed from the outside. It's actually a jerry-rigged solution. They found a tube-like structure that they repurposed and refitted. And MacGyvered is one of the previous employers that got fired from the company because he said it was unsafe. They kind of MacGyvered this mini bus size, just kind of cylinder, like a tube of toothpaste almost, basically.
It looks like a washing machine to me.
It does.
A long washing machine.
And there's only one little window in it at the back.
I thought they'd at least have like a nice window where they can, you know, like really enjoy the scenery.
Well, this is where it gets crazy, right? So it has a tiny little window at the back, which is actually where the restroom is. So the only window out of the submarine is actually in the bathroom.
Oh.
But they don't look out the window. They have a TV in the front of the submersible, which displays the camera information that's all around the submersible. But here's the thing. You're getting into a tiny little concealed, you know, coffin that's sealed essentially from the outside. You're going down into the water. You can't see out of the submarine. You could go to the little window, but the majority of what you're seeing is actually on a TV. So one must ask the question, well, what's the difference about just staying at the top of the water
and watching it on TV
and watching the video?
Now, yeah, exactly.
Because you can't actually see it.
Okay, and this is just really, it's tragic. And also tragically stupid.
And it comes with a price tag of $250,000 per person, and there's five people maximum.
And it turned out to be a very expensive coffin.
Very expensive.
And Kane, it didn't explode, it imploded.
Yeah.
Now, explode is from inside to outside, and implode is where it actually, like, comes from the outside.
All the water rushed in at such a force that it...
But apparently it happened in like milliseconds. Is that true?
Well, when you're about... I can't remember the exact figures, but when you're about, I think, 600 meters underwater or 800 meters underwater, it's like the equivalent of a polar bear standing on top of a coin, right? That's how much pressure there is.
Yeah.
But beyond that point, the pressure just continues to build to such a dramatic amount that by the time you are 3,000 meters underwater, you actually have 3,000 meters or about 2.4 miles worth of water above you, which is weight, right? And that's pushing down on you. So when you have, you know, more than 4 kilometers worth of water just on top of your head, it's a hell of a lot of pressure. And that, when that... Now, I understand that submersible submarine was only rated to go to 1,100 or 1,200 meters deep. And they were operating it at 3,600 meters deep. So I imagine because they didn't finish their journey to the Titanic by the time the vessel disappeared and they lost contact with it, I believe that as they were traveling down, the pressure was outweighing the structural stability of that object because it's not their first run underwater. They've done it many, many times, and that could have subjected it to wear and tear in certain critical places. And I imagine it would have, I think it would have been painless for them. I think what would have been the scariest thing about being under the water at that pressure is the moments before disaster when you can hear, you would have heard
creaking
that
and stuff.
The structure's not staying
really
solid.
Do you think it was making a lot of noises?
I think it would have been, it would have made, definitely started making sounds.
And then, so
buckling.
You, and by now you're wondering what's happening, and before you can think some more, it's just gone. Everything's gone.
You blink and you're in heaven, because it's just, it's like getting hit by an Empire State Building falling on your head.
Yeah.
You know, it's just,
before you know it, it just happens.
Yeah.
But I mean, Kane, isn't that better going quickly? I mean, if you're going to die underwater like that, isn't it better to just go quickly instead of sitting there and waiting for the oxygen to run out? Because that's what we thought initially. We thought they're actually sitting down there and in the darkness and waiting for the oxygen to run out and waiting for help from above,
well,
for a miracle.
At that depth, it's just above freezing. So it's not cold enough for the water to freeze, otherwise it wouldn't be water. But it's just above freezing.
Yeah.
And you would have been hypothermic, no oxygen, pitch darkness with
the worst
five
way
people.
To go.
No, that's definitely one of the worst ways that it could have gone. I think the ultimate tragedy, though, is just the sheer negligence of this particular company to address not only concerns that was brought up by their staff that they fired. So there were two accounts of two individuals who actually made a statement. Actually, one of them went to court, I believe, to basically file that this is a dangerous endeavor, that, you know, they're not meeting compliance. The CEO that was unfortunately part of that venture actually openly admitted to, you know, safety might not be the biggest concern to us right now. And, you know, the whole, let's build a vehicle capable of going 1,600 meters deep, but make it go 3,800 meters deep multiple times with very little safety checks. Let's control the submersible submarine with a $30 joystick, a little $30 Logitech controller.
I thought it was a joke initially.
No, it's real. They are extremely sensitive devices. When you think about a controller and how refined it is and how well-built it is to control something, it's actually a pretty good fit for the job. But it is, it's a $30 controller. Even the operational side of things, operating underwater is incredibly difficult. So the technology necessary to communicate between a thick amount of water, like a kilometer of water, is almost near impossible. Cell reception doesn't work, because cell reception is a physical signal, a frequency moving through the air and reaching a destination and then being retrieved again. In water, it's like 30 times denser than air. So there's very little signal capabilities of sending a signal. So they relied on like test message communications. And my whole question after all of this was also the fact that it locks only from the outside. And it has a few safety features to get it back to the surface, such as buoyancy things and all this sort of stuff. But ultimately, my biggest concern is the fact that it wasn't attached to the mothership.
But was it even possible?
Well, I've read a fair amount about how the Titanic would have had its own debris, maybe massive long cables or rope in the water and around the water floating around, you know, at the bottom there. So that might have influenced a cable. Maybe you get wrapped around a piece of the Titanic while you're navigating. But when you get stuck in a situation where you lose, and this is the feather on top really, is you lose, it's a 5-hour dive or whatever, 2.5 hours and you lose signal, right? You lose connection with your submarine as the mothership, as the people who now have five people in a coffin basically going down into the ocean. You've lost contact with them. Only 15 to 20 minutes after they were scheduled to return to the surface, which was hours later, did they actually let authorities know that something was wrong, which is for me even more mind-blowing.
Would you say it was too late anyway by then? Do you think they already just vanished by then.
Well, when imploded. You can imagine that if they lost signal, that was the point of implosion.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they lost signal, went to the wrong place, hit something went wrong, and then that was the point of implosion.
But we will never know, hey?
We won't.
It's not like we can log on to some ocean cam and see what happened.
Yeah, so it was AWOL for a few days. We didn't know where it was. We couldn't find it. We had people looking for it. And then a particular remotely operated rescue drone was sent underwater, and they found debris. That debris was later inspected, and they found it was the back of the submarine and a few pieces. And they said after some investigation, because it's at the bottom of the ocean, they don't have it in their hands. After some investigation, they believe that is, in fact, it does show signs that it was imploded. Something caused the pressure to give, or the stable pressure internal environment gave way, and it just destroyed the submarine in a flash.
Well, let's just hope it was quickly, but I do believe that all five occupants signed forms before they got on there, and the word death was written quite a few times,
yep,
mentioned in it. So you knew. You knew. You were fully aware that you could die by getting in there. And I believe the teenager, the 19-year-old who was there with his dad, he was very scared of doing it, but he did it with his father because it was sort of a Father's Day thing for them. And
it's terribly sad, eh?
That is just ridiculously sad.
Because at the end of the day, all five of those people that were in that submarine are adventurers. Adventure seekers. You know, they want to discover things. They want to analyze things. They want to see things up close. They want to be part of a great discovery. And those are all admirable things to strive for. It's just a pity that the person that they put their faith into didn't take all the necessary safety precautions. But it's bittersweet because the CEO himself, who did take shortcuts potentially, and
he perished as well. Yeah, yeah. So I mean, who are you going to sue now? But I mean,
and the company itself, I mean, they only had one submersible. It's not like they have three Titans.
Yeah.
So they've lost not only their pilot of the company, their CEO, but also the instrument that was in essence the company.
So they're done.
It's tragic.
But yeah, this is very bad, eh, Kane? But I'm just thinking, you know, knowing what you know now, I mean, this whole week we've been kind of hoping, I don't know about you, but we kind of had hope that they could still be found somewhere. And,
definitely.
And maybe they got stuck in the wreck and maybe they can pull them out. I know that somebody said, or one report said, you know, even if they found them, it would take like 8 hours to pull them up, and then they wouldn't have that amount of oxygen left by then. But I'm just thinking, I don't know. Would you get in? Be honest. I won't judge you. Would you be on that thing?
I think I would. I think the opportunity itself is quite an opportunity. I don't think I would without windows, though. I would kind of want to see it with my own eyes.
But wouldn't you want to see like how safe it is? Because that's how I am. I want to see how safe it is. I mean, you don't even get me in a lift in a mall. Because I want to know how safe is it? How do I know I'm not going to drop? That's how I am, and it's saving my life, I guess. I wouldn't get it, I promise you. Also, claustrophobic, and that small space. It's no.
And when you really understand what you're doing, which is getting into literally like a box, and then getting dropped into the ocean, sinking.
Sorry.
You know, that's a hell of a. It's definitely a fear in some people's
it's
lives.
A nightmare.
You know, that idea. I can't even. I don't even like the idea of having an anchor tied to my feet and I jump into the water. Let alone a coffin inside of a coffin sinking. That is not a good place to be. So. No, I don't know if I would. I would be very tempted to, and I'd really think it out, and I'd probably end up going. But
no, but you'll do the safety checks first.
I would definitely do a degree of safety checks.
Wouldn't you? You wouldn't, eh? Would you?
The faith. You see, the faith was in that the system was so robust and everything's checked and everything's cool. And I think if it teaches us anything, as an ending note for this particular story, it kind of shows you how unexplored our oceans are. Because when that submarine disappeared under the water, they had no equipment capable of retrieving it, at least in the immediate vicinity. The equipment that was capable of retrieving it was very few and far between, had to travel far distances. Some devices even had to be air freighted, and it was a whole process to get the necessary equipment to the area to conduct just the looking through the window to see if you can see anything. Then it was the whole idea of extraction, getting a vessel that's gone 3,800 meters down and is on the seafloor is like, how do you even go down there and retrieve it? The technology itself is a bit alarming because it underwater is very different. But here's the coup de grace for me is that particular Titanic wreckage is 2.4 miles below the surface of the water, and we can say that the water itself, the body of water that is on Earth, is very unexplored. We don't really know much about it. We definitely don't have technology that can visually project what's at the bottom there. There's no way to actually see it. But we went to the moon, landed on it, and walked on it, and that's like 200,000 miles away. So one has to beg the question, how did you manage to get onto the moon and walk on the moon, but you can't manage to get 2 miles underneath the water on our planet?
That's a very good question.
And it means no one's ever been lost in space. We haven't lost an astronaut in space. It's not like, yet. Oh, no, you know, he went out and he never came back.
That's what I'm worried about. What if they want to venture up there? You know, now they tried the ocean. What if they want to go up now? And especially Elon, you know, what if they all get into this small rocket and they don't come back again, you know?
Yeah, it's
very
true.
There's a new Black Mirror episode that's very similar to that. Two guys stuck in space, basically.
Can you just imagine the level of coordination necessary to travel to the moon and do all of that stuff? Because it was like 1960. The technology itself was... Our technology is very advanced. Now we don't have the technology capable of exploring the waters with occupants inside the exploratory vehicle. Everything's remote operated.
Because you know the Titanic sank in 1912, and only in the 80s, I think 1985, they found the wreckage.
That is crazy. And there's a whole bunch of conspiracies around the Titanic itself. As an example, the Titanic apparently had a twin called the Olympic or something like that. It had a name kind of like that. And I very briefly read about it, and apparently J.P. Morgan wasn't able to claim insurance on the Olympic or whatever the twin of the Titanic was, exact replica. So there was a conspiracy that what he ended up doing was he swapped the Titanic with the Olympic at the last second, and then they traveled out. And now that we've got the 3D mapping technology, they've actually mapped the Titanic wreck site. And what they noticed, which is very strange, is that a lot of the hull of the ship has lots of little holes in it, which isn't something you would expect to see from an iceberg collision. What you'd expect to see from an iceberg collision is a massive gaping hole down the hull of the ship. But what we see is a lot of little holes, which kind of suggests that's something that an explosion could have done. Nonetheless, J.P. Morgan got his insurance for the Titanic. And they believe that the Olympic continued as the original Titanic. So they swapped ships, sent the broken one out to be destroyed. And then more strangely enough, and this is true, but I don't know how accurate my information is because it's just a basic summary, but J.P. Morgan had a few business relations that he was busy working with to help him secure the Federal Bank Reserve. Some of the people that perished on the Titanic were actually people that were objecting the establishment of that reserve. And today it exists.
Word.
So you read about that, you're like, that is so suspicious.
Plot twist.
And apparently the pilot of this Titan submersible is actually related to one of the people from the Titanic as well. Which
I
is
saw that, yeah.
More
I think
strange.
I think there's a bit more to it. And meets the eye.
Yeah, definitely a bit like an iceberg, you know. It's on the top of the water, it looks just normal, but underneath there's like a massive...
How will we ever know for sure? I mean, there's always stories going around. You even have conspiracy theories, but how will we ever know the true story?
I don't know. I always like to think that when you one day pass away, it's you just get a run by of all the things you wondered and pondered in your life.
I really hope so. I really hope so. That would be very rewarding.
I have a lot of questions.
Same here. Wow, Kane, this is phenomenal stuff. Thank you so much for sharing all that information with us. And then we'll be back just after this with some more Tech Plus.
Let's do it.
shaking me was overcome. Walking these lonely streets, even in good company, I want to run. But now I'm embracing the way I am. I don't need nobody to hold my hand. I'm doing it all by myself. I'm moving it all by myself. I'll be my own motivation. I'll listen to nothing they're saying. I'm loving me, loving me. Doing it.
Hello and welcome back to Tech Plus. If you just joined us, you missed our discussion on the Olympic.
Titan.
The Titan.
Submersible.
Where did I get Olympic now?
The name of the Titanic twin, but I don't know if it is that name.
Okay, so. Sorry. Yeah. But anyway, so yeah, the submersible. But luckily for you, there's a podcast available, so it you is. Can listen to it later. Now we move on to some more tech news that made headlines this weekend.
So on the note of, you know, I think that Titan place was quite an uncomfortable environment, right? But speaking of uncomfortable environments, NASA volunteers will soon enter simulated Mars habitat for 378 days. So it, essentially what it is it's a simulation for living on Mars, which will last 378 days. And I guess it seems kind of legit, because where does one practice to arrive on Mars? You know, you can't just practice arriving on the moon.
Yeah.
So you got to build a simulated environment. And being NASA, they're obviously taking it pretty seriously, because, you know, you got to facilitate people for 378 days pretending they're on Mars. I mean, that sounds even more intense than a movie set. You know what I mean? It's like, it sounds harder than Hollywood to pull off.
Why 378?
I don't know why they needed the extra.
Why not 365?
Yeah, well, I don't know why they needed the extra 10 days.
Strange.
Maybe it's two weeks of like of introduction, and then they begin for a year.
Good point.
Maybe.
I think. Let's say that.
It's a project that will see four volunteers spend 378 days in a simulated Mars habitat at the U.S. National Aeronautics and Space Admissions Johnson Space Center. That is the name and a half of a space center, hey?
Yeah.
U.S. National Aeronautics and Space Administration's John Space Center. Put that on your on the sign next to the road. It's like the whole sign.
Yeah. Yo, what a name.
So the mission is designed to help NASA prepare for human exploration of Mars. And the team of volunteers comprise of Alyssa Shannon, Ross Brockwell, Kelly Haston, and Nathan Jones. The volunteers will enter the simulated habitat on Sunday, 25 June 2023, and leverage their experience in science, engineering, and health during their stay. Their responsibilities will include growing crops, conducting research, performing Mars walks, and maintaining the habitat. Team members will experience many of the difficulties one could expect from a human mission to Mars, including environmental stresses, equipment failures, limited resources, and confinement. NASA will also create communication delays to make the experience as realistic as possible. The habitat measures about 1,700 square feet or 158 square meters and comprises of 9 rooms, including bedrooms, a communal bathroom and toilet, and a common area. NASA has included a small area beside the habitat to simulate the planet's surface for Mars walks. So very interesting. Must be very difficult to simulate the gravity, though. I don't think they're doing that. I think it's going to be very human, mental, you know, confinements, isolation, delayed communication, stress factors, low oxygen levels. I think you're going to see a lot of that, but maybe not the whole floating on. Because I believe Mars has 1/10 of the gravity of Earth. So you're 10 times lighter. You're a 1/10 of your weight. And obviously there's other gravitational pull factors, so you could just jump very far and very long and land again. You know, that's kind of, it's like a moonwalk, but the moon has less gravity.
Would you go on that mission for 378 days?
Whoa, you know, there's a special kind of feeling about, you know, we talk about going in a submarine two miles down. You're already 2 miles away from the surface. Is like, it's unswimmable.
Yep.
There's no quick fix, and we saw the devastation. So when you're millions of miles away.
No, this is crazy.
That is just scary. On another level completely. But at the same time, isn't it kind of the same as going in the Titan submersible? Because there is only one way to do it, and there is no turning back once you do it.
For me, I always like a backup plan, and I need to know where the exit is.
For Mars.
This is not working for me. There's just no way, not in this lifetime.
How fast can you run? Maybe you can run from Mars back to Earth. You know, go for a light jog.
There's no way, Jose.
And it must be expensive to simulate a Mars environment as well.
Yeah.
Speaking of expensive, Saudi Arabia. We know Saudi. They have the Burj Khalifa, which is the tallest building in the world. They have a massive oil industry. It's their primary resource for generating revenue, at least what got them to where they are now. And they're building that mini city as well. So that city that's just a wall of civilization, essentially.
You remember you spoke about it quite in detail a few months ago.
They've begun building that, yeah.
Whoa.
Trucks on the ground happening every day. Now, Saudi Arabia has decided to push into different industries, to move slightly away from the oil side of things and start diversifying their wealth portfolio. So one of the areas that they're going into, which I thought was very interesting, is gaming, right? So they're going to invest 709 billion rand to become a gaming hub. So that's $38 billion. It's almost the price of Twitter, essentially, which keeps blowing my mind how expensive Twitter was. Like, if you think about it, an entire nation is throwing money at establishing an industry within their country, and it doesn't even touch how much Elon paid for Twitter. It's madness. It's so much money.
But I think he's regretting it now, by the way.
I think
it's not looking good right now.
Well, he's got a lot of turmoil. There's a lot of growing pains that he has to deal with.
Australia even this week said, if you don't clear up all the trash that's coming through now, that you're not filtering, we're going to fine you.
Yeah.
Big bucks, Australian dollars.
It's like kind of like you're wielding a fire extinguisher. Instead of extinguishing fires, it makes them.
Exactly. And that's the very reason also why the advertisers pulled out. Like, was it more than 50% of his advertising revenue got cut? Because people don't want their ads seen next to that vile content.
Terrible content. Yeah, you don't want to pay for that as well.
Mm.
So Saudi is now going into the games, and what they want to do is they want to establish, you know, quite a gaming hub. They want to go into a bit of esports. They want to go into game development. They want to bring those industries into their country. So that's their push. I mean, 700 billion is enough to make some moves in the gaming world. But that also still doesn't even compare with Activision and Microsoft going into their deal to buy Call of Duty. I mean, that's a billions as well. So, I mean, it's a big industry. It's a massive industry, and obviously they're going to be going into it. The next thing we're taking a look at is James Cameron, who made a comment on Titan and the Titanic.
So James Cameron is the guy who made Titanic, the movie.
I think he made the movie, and he's also made Avatar.
Yes.
And King Kong.
That's it, yeah.
As well.
Mastermind.
So he's brilliant. A very good producer. Yeah. He said during an interview with ABC News, a number of top players in the deep submergence engineering community even wrote letters to the company OceanGate saying that what they were doing was too experimental to carry passengers and that they needed to be certified. So he said he's struck by the similarity of the Titanic disaster itself. The captain was repeatedly warned about ice ahead of his ship, and yet he seemed at full he went ahead at full speed into the ice field on a moonless night. And, he's kind of right, eh? I mean, the guy who made the Titanic movie, I think, put a lot of thought into everything that happened there to get that. Because that was a hell of a production, let's be honest. Time it was made.
Crazy.
What a movie.
And, nowadays people rely a lot on green screen and CGI. Do you know how many of those water scenes were actually really done?
Yeah.
It was shot in this massive pool. I mean, you can go on YouTube and see Titanic behind the scenes. And then I think the water was actually nice and warm.
Hey, that's so cool.
Yeah, and it wasn't deep or anything, you know. Obviously, they added effects afterwards, and then had like small toy sets where they would push the water through for the inside scenes where the water goes through the passages and stuff.
Jeez.
It was brilliantly done. Have you seen that before?
No.
Listen, do yourself a favor. It's going to blow your mind. Nowadays it's so easy. Well, not easy, but you know, people
easier.
Just fall back easier. Fall back on CGI, computer generated. What's it called? CGI.
Your CGI, yeah.
What I don't know what it stands for. Computer generated. Whatever.
Something.
Whoops. But anyway, so it's just easier to do it like that on a computer. But those guys actually got wet. And they got cameras wet. I'm sure they lost equipment as well. Maybe people were injured. They had like a set that was built, that could split in two for the sinking scenes where the ship breaks. And then those people were stunt people flying. Remember when the ship broke, the people were like flying from the deck way at the top and then falling down on stuff below? Those were actual stunt people. They did it.
Insane.
No, I'll send you the link. It's brilliant. The Titanic was... The movie was... I must watch it again.
Something out of this
world.
It was
a masterpiece.
It was a masterpiece.
But I always cry. I can't watch it without crying. I promise you.
It is very sad. What else makes me feel a little bit sad and weird, though, is high-end restaurants could soon be getting the first lab-grown chicken in America, right? The U.S. Agriculture Department has given approval to Upside Foods and Good Meat to begin selling chickens derived from cultivated cells. This would be the first lab-grown meat sold in America, and the intended market will be upscale restaurants, according to AP News. Both companies have joined a bevy of other biotech firms in a race to secure funding and be the first companies to unseat big traditional meat processors like Tyson, JBS, and Cargill. US approves chicken made from cultivated cells, basically. I mean, would you go to a high-end restaurant and order chicken that's been grown in a lab?
No.
Really? What if it was said to you, it was told to you that this is like the healthiest,
no,
most organic?
No, I mean, it will taste very nice, I'm sure. No, I don't know. No, Kane, it just sounds... It sounds
like,
off, eh?
It feels like you get, like, free range, which is, like, tolerable, especially for people who eat meat. People who don't will not even tolerate free range. Then you have not free range, which is, like, a bit hectic. And then you have, like, no say in life itself. We'll just grow you in the lab, and you will go into the shelf. It also feels kind of...
Doesn't feel right.
It feels very, very weird, eh? I don't know how I feel about that. I don't even know how I'd feel about trying it. I probably would. I'd probably find it quite delicious.
But I mean, hold on. Would this chicken live?
It would. It's just grown in a lab, so it's got no traditional life, basically.
But it's alive.
So they basically take some cells and they put it in a petri dish and then they grow and it grows into meat.
What would it look like?
I don't know. I'm very nervous.
What will this chicken look like? completely dysfunctional chicken with three heads, maybe.
I don't know what makes me more scared slash nervous. The fact that, you know, you could walk into a restaurant and potentially on the menu find something that was grown in a lab. Or the fact that that might be the norm in 20, 30 years from now. That might be like, maybe the good food is the organic stuff, and the free, cheap food, world budget food is all the lab grown stuff. Hell of a future to think about, I'll tell you that much.
I'm not so sure I want to be part of it.
Stick to my organics.
I'm really worried for the kids. If you have kids now, it's going to be a very scary world in 20, 30 years from now. I spoke to somebody about it today, actually, and it was a very grim topic.
That is mad.
No.
When we come back from the break,
yeah,
we're going to talk about heat waves across the world that are causing power grid struggles, just like we're seeing here in South Africa, which is a very interesting
turn
of events. Yeah. And we're also going to take another look at Ford, that's received government funding, one of the biggest amounts of government funding ever given out since the big financial crash, the bailouts, and TikTok COO has quit.
Is that the guy who was in court?
No.
Oh, that's the guy below.
That's the CEO, I think, was in court.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. When we come back.
We got a crazy love. Down, baby, up, baby. Till the night is up. But you're a mile away. Can't see me cry, baby. Sweet holiday. Come rescue me. I tell you what the world needs now is a brand new me. I wanna fly away. Somewhere high where I know you won't be. Call me crazy, but I really wanna lose your love. Call me crazy, but I really wanna lose your love. Standing at the bar stop, wearing your top. You're a king, baby, king, baby. Holding on to your love. I should have known when you stopped buying. No point in being a queen if I got no power. Standing in the background trying to make some sound. Cry, baby, as you pull the curtain around. I put my hands up to my eyes to hide it. This love suicide, cause my mama told me be gracious and outrageous. And never sell your heart to nobody for money, babe. Don't play with matches, you get burned someday so bad. Putting on that red dress. Wish I listened to our mama say. We got a crazy love. Down, baby, up, baby. Till the night is up. But you're a mile away. Can't see me cry, baby. Sweet holiday. Come rescue me. I tell you what the world needs now is a brand new me. I wanna fly away. Somewhere high where I know you won't be. Crazy, but I really wanna lose your love. Call me crazy, but I really wanna lose your love. Standing at the bar stop, wearing your top. You're a king, baby, holding on to your love. I should have known when you stopped buying flowers. No point in being a queen if I got no power. Standing in the background, trying to make some sound. As you pull the car around, I put my hands up to my eyes to hide it. This love's suicide, cause my mama told me be gracious and outrageous. And never sell your heart to nobody for money, babe. Don't play with matches, you get burned someday so bad. Putting on that red dress. Wish I listened to what mama say. I'm always sweeping up the mess that you left behind. Boy, I've woken up. I need a holiday, sweet, sweet sun, to dry these tears away. Standing at the bar stop, wearing your top. You're a king, baby, holding on to your love. I should've known when you stopped buying flowers. No point in being a queen if I got no power. Standing in the background, trying to make some sound. Cry, baby, as you pull the gun down. I put my hands up to my eyes to hide it. This love's suicide, cause my mama told me be gracious and outrageous and never.
We are back, and I mean, it's the last part of the show today. And Kane, hello.
Hello.
Yes, what's up?
Heat waves, something we're definitely not experiencing at the moment. We got like frozen waves.
Yeah, it's freezing, man.
But not so much for North America all the way to Asia. Heat waves are stressing out their power grids. And you know what's very interesting is when we had our most severe load shedding, I even remember talking to you about it, and I was like, you know, how is the rest of the world going to be prepared for this kind of power struggle? You know, whether it's just the consumer knowing how to get alternative power, what's safe, what's not, how to manage and maintain that secondary power, or even just understanding for the general consumer what uses a lot of power, what doesn't use a lot of power, why does it use a lot of power, how can I save power, and from the entrepreneurial side of things, the technologists, like, you know, no one's focused on making sure that a geyser uses as little power as possible. We've got it to an amount, but that amount that we say is an eco-friendly geyser is still a reasonable amount of power.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so when I always wondered to myself, what's going to happen around the world when they start getting hit, or if they even do get hit by some of these kind of factors, you know, more demand than there is supply, breakdowns of traditional power generating facilities. And one thing that I didn't consider, which seems like that it might be a case much sooner than later, is the heat waves. So a lot of places are like experiencing record-breaking heat waves across. So essentially, heat waves are pushing power grids to their brink around the world. And when temperatures spike, people tend to need stuff like air conditioning.
Mm.
And that can put a lot of pressure on the power grid and potentially trigger things like blackouts and that sort of stuff if there's not electricity on hand. But that's the worst case scenario grid operators are currently facing. And you know, there's talks of like, I spoke to a friend of mine in Texas the other day, 43 degrees Celsius. I mean, jeez, that's hot. And I was like, do you think it'll get hotter? He's like, oh, no, 100% it'll be hotter. Because they obviously know how their climate works and where they are in their season and the heat wave. So they're looking at 43 to like 45, 46 degrees Celsius. And different regions, I think Beijing was experiencing like 43 degrees Celsius. India was also, but India had a blackout, so they couldn't even run their air conditionings, and they also had like 40 degrees Celsius.
Didn't people die there? I read somewhere
people
in the
died.
News.
Yeah, people passed away.
Like because of heat. The heat.
So the heat can be so severe that you need to put air conditioning on, which can save your life, but because you're putting air conditioning on, it can cause a blackout, which can end risking your life.
No, man.
You see the catch 22.
Wicked.
Yeah.
But listen, wasn't it last year or the year before where London clocked 40 or 41 degrees Celsius? That
man,
scared
the big
me.
Big statement. Remember that?
That scared me a lot because London, that temperature in London, no, that's very unheard of, eh?
No.
I mean, the Big Ben almost melted. I mean, in London, you don't get 40, 41 degrees Celsius
no.
in London. That was creepy.
No, we're definitely experiencing climate change. And yeah. I can tell we're experiencing climate change. There might be an alternative option, which is that the season is shifting along the calendar. So what we should, you know, where America believes we've still got about a month until we're at peak summer,
mm.
or a few weeks until we're at peak summer, they might be at peak summer right now.
Mm.
But the other scenario is that it is truly the same geographical time frame on a calendar year, except you still got it 3 weeks more heating to go.
Yeah, the patterns are definitely changing. Eh?
Yeah, and you know, that puts pressure on power grids, and we need to, as an entire population, start really thinking about how to not just reduce our own power by saying I won't put my geyser on, you know, 6 hours a week, but we actually really have to look at the fundamentals of how we use power and draw power and store power. Because even if you think about load shedding, let's say we do two stages of load shedding and the demand is very, very low, we're still creating, you know, 18,000 megawatts of power, but only, you know, 9,000 megawatts of power being used. What happens to the excess power? Where does it go? Is it stored? I don't think it's stored.
No.
You would have to have a massive battery facility to store it. Maybe there's micro facilities, but batteries are very, very expensive. So, like, there's the whole thing about it's one thing to be able to effectively reduce the power from the grid, but when you have more power being generated than power being used, how is it saved, and is there really smart ways to do that? So that now's the time to really start thinking about that. because it only gets worse if climate change doesn't change. I mean, America's got green climate emission goals, South Africa's got climate emission goals, and all this sort of stuff, but it's a long walk, and it takes time to repair the damage we've done over 40, 50 years.
The question is it too late?
I don't think it's too late. I think the right things are happening now to actually address it. For example, the next topic, Ford, has received a $9.2 billion government loan for an EV battery factory, for multiple EV battery factory projects. It's a truly eye-opening amount of money. So Ford will receive that as part of a conditional loan from the U.S. Department of Energy to aid in the construction of three huge electric vehicle battery factories. This is something that the agency announced on Thursday. The mammoth loan represents the biggest government offering to an automaker since the bailouts following the Great Recession of 2009. And the loan originates from the DOE's Advanced Technology Vehicles Manufacturing Program, which famously helped put Tesla on the map, also provided a boost for joint venture of General Motors and LG Energy Solutions to help fund the construction of new lithium-ion batteries and manufacturing facilities. These are the kind of things that we need to be seeing. It's a big push on the beginning of the supply chain. To have a lot of electric vehicles, you need a lot of electric batteries. To have a lot of electric batteries, you either need to import it or manufacture it. So America's saying, well, let's manufacture them. Let's bring the supply chain in-house so that we can produce more for cheaper. Or I don't know what exactly the goal is, but they definitely want to make sure that they're able to create, you know, some of the fundamentals of the electric vehicle industry, because they won't be able to make enough vehicles to supply enough people with batteries in the amount of time they have with the manufacturing capabilities that the world has right now. I mean, we've spoken about it briefly. Lithium-ion batteries are usually a lot of 3-volt cells combined and packaged into a container and giving unto the user. Right, those 3-volt battery cells is what you actually need to look at when you're trying to figure out who makes these things, because they're all different combinations of 3-volt cells most times. You know, you'll have the oddity, but it really does kind of work like that. So we need initiatives like that. And maybe what we don't need is something that TikTok has now, which is their COO has just quit.
Why?
Well, apparently it's from such great success that they feel their time is better spent on other things. And in the midst of China's problems with America because of their relation, TikTok's relationship with ByteDance, which is their Chinese counterpart or parent company. But yeah, he quit. And from it, I don't know who will take their place and how America will respond to that. But, you know, it's always worth keeping an eye on that.
Well, that's gone quiet completely now, eh?
Yeah.
That story about America and TikTok. Kane, you want to say thank you to Mozambique?
Why?
Because they're giving us electricity.
Oh, yes.
For the next 3 to 12 months, Mozambique will be giving South Africa up to 1,000 megawatts of electricity.
It's one stage of load shedding.
Exactly. It helps a bit, eh?
Well, I mean, if we look at this week and if it's already up and running, it's helped a lot.
It's been signed. Yeah, it says it's signed this week. They signed the power purchase agreement.
Why so South Africa is buying power from Mozambique.
Yeah, I thought we giving them power.
I thought we were giving them power. Same, and decided to keep the power for ourselves. That's a weird change of narrative.
Could that just be another way of saying we're just giving them 1,000 megawatts less?
Yeah, what if we're giving them 3,000 megawatts and now we're giving them 2,000 megawatts?
Yeah, but now it's kind of said.
Because I don't see any number on the paper there for how much we're paying for this 1,000 megawatts.
This is very suspicious.
And is it cheaper than the diesel? Is it like...
Good
and,
point.
And
yeah.
Also the other thing is, you know, we've had pretty severe load shedding. What, we get 1,000 megawatts onto the grid and suddenly we're at stage 1 and 2, like one load shedding a day. Some days we don't even have load shedding now. I'm not complaining, but it is mighty suspicious that
it must be
so
that
little time in between. And everyone was saying winter's going to be the worst, and it is pretty flippin' cold. You know, it is really, really cold.
Yeah, but
sure, people are using heaters.
I was expecting weeks without electricity and that kind of stuff. The way the media was painting the picture, this is going to be the longest, darkest winter of your life, you know?
Kind of makes you wonder if the last winters where we had load shedding, winter was used as an excuse. Because the winter hasn't changed, it's got worse. Last year we had some pretty horrid winter load shedding. Now suddenly we don't, because we have 1,000 extra megawatts of power.
No, it must be a few other things as
well.
Doesn't
add up.
I know there's more and more electricity, energy, green stuff coming online. And Cape Town's really pushing their solar now, hey? The incentives for the homeowners selling your electricity back. I think homeowners can already start selling electricity, or the businesses, I think, can already start selling. So they're pushing these things, but is it really making that difference? I've seen the figures recently, you know, the demand, the daily demand and then supply, and it's been down, actually. It used to be like 31,000 megawatts. Nowadays, hovering around 29,000 to 30,000 megawatts. So suddenly we're saving electricity.
Very interesting.
Did everybody just switch off all the heaters?
Like in tandem. Very weird. I'm not even using my heater the same amount, if not more, now that it's colder, I won't lie.
What kind of heater do you have? Is it a gas heater?
Fan heater.
Same here.
Yeah.
And the nice thing about it is it warms up a room really quickly if you close everything.
Yeah.
But they chew power. I don't know about you, but
they drink it.
My thing is so small, and it's blowing. It's basically a glorified hairdryer.
Yeah,
it's a fan.
With an
actual fan blowing through an element.
Yeah. Before we close off, I have one more piece of news, and it's quite an achievement. It's a first for humankind in the technological world. An AT&T-backed cellular satellite company successfully sent a 4G LTE signal from space to ground.
Wow.
Where a normal phone out the store, off the counter, could connect to that LTE signal and establish a 10 megabyte per second internet connection. Now, normal LTE talks about you on the ground, there's a cell tower in the region or multiple cell towers in the region, and you piggyback off those cell towers to get your internet access. So for a phone to connect with a satellite that's at low Earth orbit is quite an achievement, because the distance between you and a cell tower and you and a satellite are probably way different. So it's a big step in being able to provide internet access to remote regions, kind of like what Starlink was trying to do, except Starlink isn't distributing an LTE signal onto Earth. It's all satellite internet based, whereas this is essentially a cell tower as a satellite in low Earth orbit. And in the coming weeks, they'll be testing a 5G connection. And that's potentially how they could get LTE mobile network internet into places that have very little connectivity, very little infrastructure for cell towers. And sometimes it's not just do we have enough money to put up a cell tower? It's like we have to put up a cell tower and we have to connect it together, right? So it's a big mission. It's a big process. And this kind of technology will help us achieve, you know, much better network connections in remote regions, which is always valuable. So,
yes.
Hey, a W for the week. We managed to do that. That's great.
Fantastic. Kane, and that's a wrap for another Tech Plus for this week at least. And, thank you as always for your input. And we'll see you again next week. Have a lekker weekend.
You too. And thank you to all of our listeners for listening. And we'll see you next week.
Cheers.
Bye-bye.
Honestly, I wear your football sweatshirt when I sleep, so I can feel a piece of you on me. But that don't make a difference to you, does it? I know it doesn't. I wait at home for someone I can't call my own. Someone I can't call my own. One day I wake up and realize I've wasted my time.